BT is out today. Ronge and Randy with you. We head to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line, and our friend Greg Amzinger, native St. Louis and Lindenwood grad of MLB Network, had a great time. At least I could, from my viewing standpoint, doing the Futures game and everything that I saw you do, Greg, at the All-Star game, it looked like you had a great time.
You know, I was just talking to this guy. It's good to hear your voice, Randy. Miss you, bud. I look back, and I'm sure other broadcasters are this way. You try to survive everything. You want to do a good job. As a broadcaster, you're always thinking what's next. And when you're doing as many shows per day, you're never actually in the moment. So when people come up to you and you're like, hey, you look like you had a blast there in Cleveland. Did you have fun? I'm like looking back. Well, I don't think the show sucked. Yeah, it was a great time. Yeah, I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. You're never just in the moment, so it's hard to actually give that answer genuinely. I survived them all, and the good shows were good. So yes, I had a blast in Cleveland.
And you were incredibly well dressed.
Oh, thank you, thank you. The red carpet show means a lot to me. You know, I do think that I've had a hand in Major League Baseball players stepping their game up from a fashion perspective. What people haven't seen the last 4 years on the red carpet is me talking trash to Major League Baseball stars during commercial breaks. Like, that's all you're bringing to the party? That's it? You're on a red carpet and you got a T-shirt on, Nolan Arenado, for real? I am a broadcaster and I have severely outdressed you. What is wrong? So years I've been doing this to players, and I don't think that shocks anybody. But now this whole group is getting into it, and this is the best red carpet we ever had. Players care. They're all dealing with stylists now. Some of them are wearing designers. This was a legit red carpet. Next year's going to be in L.A., so we're going to have a fashion expert with me and Harold. I cannot wait. It's going to be a blast. But this is becoming a bigger and bigger event because the players are really getting into the fashion.
Was Lindor's outfit the best? Aside from you, obviously.
Thank you. The way the rules worked, the broadcasters can't be named best dressed. If they were, I think there would have been a different outcome. but Francisco Lindor gave great effort, embodied the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame theme with Cleveland. I don't know if it was best dressed. I would never wear that out ever. But it was a very strong statement. And Josh Bell, we let Josh Bell, who's obsessed with fashion, and because this was just his first All-Star game, his first red carpet, he couldn't win. You have to be on multiple red carpets to win best dressed. That's the other rule that I made up. So we let Josh Bell be the judge, and he picked Francisco Lindor, who's been a finalist the previous 3 years. So it was about time. It was in Cleveland. I think the TV gods, the baseball gods, the fashion gods united, and they let Francisco Lindor take the crown home.
Hey, Greg, last year Colorado was a wild card team with 91 wins. They were the second wild card team. At the moment, the St. Louis Cardinals are 44-44. They would need to go 47-27 to get to 91 wins this year. Do they have it in them to even go 47-27 and get to 91 wins?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, look, it's a bummer to see Yadi's thumb not healing properly, and then Waino back spasms. That's a bummer to start the second half. But Goldschmidt and Carpenter never had that carry us on your back fellas stretch for 2 weeks. And it's coming. I mean, the Cardinals need Matt Carpenter to do what Matt Carpenter did in the second half last year. And they need Goldschmidt to do what he did for the Diamondbacks in the second half last year. So these two players, who I think are arguably the best offensive talents in the lineup, have had mediocre, in Matt Carpenter's case, a poor season so far, and the team's at 500. The pitching can only go up. I think Flaherty's last start shows that he's ready. In some weird way, I have this feeling in my bad knee, guys, that Flaherty's going to have a monster second half. And the moment that would turn it for him was when he got picked off second base to end a game. Because it's a moment that is stuck in my mind. He stayed there. We have a ballpark camera in center field. When he got picked off at Busch Stadium to end the game and the Marlins were celebrating, he just stayed on a knee and he didn't leave the field.
Right.
So the Marlins walked up the field after they celebrated, and then here came the grounds crew, and they almost started walking off. And Flaherty was still there by himself. I've never wanted to go hug a baseball player more in my life. I felt so bad for him. He just kind of stared and owned it, and no teammate came out to pick him up. And since that moment, there's just this different anger in him. Always a good kid, nice kid. Now he's kind of an angry kid, and I like it. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Flaherty pitch like a number one, the Cardinals are going to bolster that bullpen, which I'm sure is another topic we're going to go to in this interview. I would be shocked if they don't get Will Smith. They need to be honed in on the closer for the San Francisco Giants. That's the guy they need in their pen. There's not a lot of depth on the left side in the bullpen when you look at guys you can go trade for. They must get Will Smith. If all of those things come together, of course they could do that. They could make a serious run in the second half.
Are you saying that the Cardinals can get the best relief pitcher in baseball this year?
I don't know if I would ever say that about Will Smith. I mean,
this year.
Listen, he's been very good. No doubt about that. But like we saw in the All-Star game when he threw what? On his third pitch, Joey Gallo went bridge, and Aroldis Chapman strutted in and embarrassed three guys. Aroldis Chapman is still the best relief pitcher. I don't care what his metrics are this year. I don't care what his spin rate is. He's pitching in a meaningful game every time he steps on the mound compared to Will Smith, who, tip your cap to what he's been doing, the pressure isn't there in San Francisco. So his 23 saves are commendable, but he's not the best reliever in baseball. He's having one of the best seasons, and the Cardinals could definitely use that, but I wouldn't say Will Smith is numero uno in that category.
I think you're right. Overall, this team could have a run in them before the season ends, and hopefully it happens soon enough to, you know, kind of propel them a little bit. I guess my concern is, what does the rest of the division do? And I'm still not all that worried about the Pirates and the Reds as far as winning the division, but it's still the Cubs and the Brewers that the Cardinals have to worry about. And I also am concerned those two teams will do something before the deadline. What do you think they end up doing?
I think the Cubs already had their major splash. Their position players are, they're overflowing with position players. They are. I mean, the Ben Zobrist saga hurts them. They're still hoping that he comes back, so that could be an addition, but the Craig Kimbrel move was their big one. And this team's payroll is up there already. The Milwaukee Brewers, I believe, are going to get a starting pitcher. I've said that for the last 5 years, but this is the year they're going to do it. I would be shocked if Madison Bumgarner wasn't wearing a Brewer uniform. He'd be perfect for them. From what I'm hearing, the Yankees are out on Bumgarner compared to what their interest was before because of his rental status, whereas the Brewers are ready to do CC Sabathia circa whatever year that was and ride a lefty into the ground and wish him luck as he goes into free agency. It really didn't affect CC in a negative way, but Madison Bumgarner, they need a guy that's got that kind of presence because Davies is a good young right-hander, but he's not the guy. He's not game one. He's not a game one guy, and they've been needing a game one guy, especially if they don't win this division and get into a wild card. The Cubs are you know, fit. They fit this race right now. Half game up. If they do fall into the wild card, they've got three guys that you would feel confident giving the ball to in a win-or-go-home situation, whereas the Brewers do not have that. The Brewers could use Davies in the last day of the regular season if it comes down to a nail-biter, and then they've spent him. Now what do? Do you have a bullpen game? Because the Brewers are known for doing that. That's a mess. So they need that second pitcher, that next guy. I think Bumgarner is the perfect fit for the Brewers.
MLB Network's Greg Amsinger with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And MLB Network features the Nationals and Phillies at 5 o'clock. And you can watch Greg host MLB Tonight immediately after that game. Greg, do you feel any differently about this year's Dodgers than the last couple of years? 60-32, running away with the league. But they've done that before.
Yeah, but this is different. Clayton Kershaw is their third best pitcher.
Pretty impressive.
What does that tell you, man? Another team that has to add to their bullpen depth, but that's not anything that's other than par for the course for every other team that's in the mix. They're loaded. I mean, Jock Peterson's an incredible talent. We saw that in the home run derby, and he's an afterthought in their lineup. He's an afterthought. He doesn't play sometimes. Now they're like, hey, try to learn first base because we would love for you to play against, you know, righties, and we got so many good lefties. We don't know if you're one of our favorites. That's basically the reality of the situation for Los Angeles Dodgers. Bellinger's having an MVP year. Max Muncy is not a one-year fluke. Go around the diamond. They're stacked. They're just stacked. Justin Turner, if we can get a healthy Justin Turner for the second half, a healthy Corey Seager, it's crazy what this team is doing. The Verdugo kid is a legit star, I think, in the making. But the pitching is where they are beating everybody. I mean, I think Hyunjin Ryu, if he stays on this pace, which, again, was overlooked at the All-Star game, had a scoreless first inning, but everyone was talking about Verlander because he threw 99 and all the other young flamethrowers that pitched in the Midsummer Classic. Ryu misses barrels, and his ERA is around 1.5. And if he finishes the year that way, just go back and look at the last four starting pitchers to win MVP, and then compare their numbers through this many starts to where Ryu is right now. Their ERAs don't come close. So I don't think that Ryu's is going to win the Cy Young. I think Ryu is having such a monstrous year that while all the talk is about Yelich and Bellinger, I think Ryu is going to be the MVP. He's going to be the Cy Young and MVP in the National League. Walker Buehler could be the best pitcher they have in terms of swing and miss stuff. Best pure stuff, no doubt. He'll be a Game 2 starter, and then Clayton Kershaw is your 3. That screams World Series champion to me.
I think the team in that division, other than the Dodgers, that I'm really intrigued by is the Padres, and they're right at 500. I mean, they're 14 games out, but everything they did during the offseason and obviously the Machado acquisition, how long do you think it really is before they're a truly competitive within their division team?
I think soon. I wouldn't be blown away to see this team in the wild card, to see this team in the postseason this year. They are going to be very active in a month, less than a month now. They're going to be extremely active in a few weeks for the trade deadline. If there was a team that would say, yep, we'll take all the money and here's a prospect, for Zach Greinke, it's the San Diego Padres. They are more than happy to spend a ton of money. You have to remind yourselves, they wanted Bryce Harper after they signed Manny Machado. They were in on that. They wanted a short-term deal, but they were going to pay $40 million a year for Bryce Harper. They wanted both. This team is ready to win. They're sick and tired of losing. They look at the division as an opportunity. Opportunity to win. The Giants were a mega power for a long time. Their cellar dwellers are not going to be relevant for years to come. Then you got the Arizona Diamondbacks who are trying to be competitive while they're hitting the reboot button 35 times. The Colorado Rockies just lost 6 in a row, so in their park, no consistency can ever be had. This is a time to strike. They have arguably the most talented player in the National League right now. Yes, Yelich and Bellinger have a commercial and they're on pace at almost 60 home runs. Fernando Tatis Jr. is the most talented player in the National League. I used to say that about Javi Baez. I still think he's around there, but I'm sorry, dude. 6'4", wiry, strong, baby-age kid that's got a flame-throwing arm who hits missiles and steals bags, and I'm all in. Fernando Tatis Jr. is insanely good. And I haven't even mentioned the Machados and everyone. Hosmer's having a good year. And oh, yeah, they got this guy, Franmil Reyes and Hunter Renfro, that are on pace to hit 50 home runs that weren't even getting a sniff of the All-Star game. This team is good. The starting pitching, don't even talk about what's there now. Their farm system is loaded. It's overflowing. So these kids are eventually going to come up. I wouldn't be shocked to see Mackenzie Gore pitch in a meaningful game in the month of September. One of the best young left-handers I've ever seen, okay? So then you've got tons of kids like that. You've got so many young arms. You can go trade to get anybody you want. The Padres are way relevant. The Padres are going to be the second-best team in that division for the next 5 years. They might be the best team in 3 years. That's the direction they're heading.
Greg, I agree with you about Tatis, and that's just a microcosm of what a young man's game this has become. And we saw it with the All-Star game the other night, all the young players, but he very well could be. I agree with you that he's the most talented. He could be the best player in the league really soon.
You know, great point, because let's look at the all-rookie final for the Home Run Derby. Are you telling me any veteran could have outlasted Vladdy Guerrero Jr.? Or Peter Alonso in that event? Do you think Aaron Judge would have wiped the floor with those guys?
No.
Really?
No.
I don't think so. Do you think Bryce Harper would have destroyed those two kids? No, I don't think so. I think these young stars, I've been saying this for years, the Jim Callises, the Jonathan Mayos, the Baseball America, that's it. Baseball America, MLB.com, all these scouting services, right? They're on point. They're doing their homework, and they're nailing it. All of these prospects that are can't miss are exactly that. They're can't miss. We're not seeing duds anymore. So the young prospects that are coming up to the big leagues are not just becoming good players, but they're becoming stars like Peter Alonso. And, yes, it is a young man's game because these kids have been on blast. They've been on a national stage for years. I was in the booth for the Futures game with Ken Griffey Jr., and Ken Griffey Jr. said to me, he's like, look, I knew at the age of 14 I could win a Gold Glove playing center field. At the age of 14. He's like, I was in a big league ballpark ever since I was a baby shagging fly balls. I knew I was good enough at the age of 14 that if I was playing in the big leagues, I could win a Gold Glove playing defense in the big leagues. So when you're subjected to it at a young age, Peter Alonso, I get it wasn't, but Fernando Tatis was in a big league clubhouse ever since he was a baby. When you're around it, the awe factor of being in the big leagues doesn't exist. They all believe they belong. And guys like Guerrero and Tatis, these familiar last names, you know, the Biggios, the Bichettes, which are all coming, These guys are – this second wave of DNA, it's going to be powerful, and it's going to own Major League Baseball. The future is way bright for the sport.
You know, it makes me think of the first name I'm thinking of here is Victor Martinez, who would always have his kid out on the field. And the little, he's like 5 years old, and he's swinging a big league bat.
That kid? I saw that kid switch hitting at the age of seven.
Yes.
In Lakeland, Florida, and he was hitting missiles to the outfield.
All right, so in 10 years, just keep an eye on Victor Martinez, son. Because that guy's probably going to be.
How about this? I threw wiffle balls to Jack Leiter in Studio 42 when he was 9 years old, and now he's going to go to Vanderbilt. And if he was willing to be drafted, he would have been a top 10 pick in the MLB draft. Throws 98 miles an hour, Jack Leiter. So all these familiar last names: Zach Plesac, Dan Plesac's nephew. Mm. All these familiar last names. They've been around the yard, and that just gives them a leg up on everyone else.
Greg, for some reason, the Cleveland Indians are always – people are talking about Trevor Bauer possibly being dealt. What do you think they end up doing? I mean, they're in the wild card right now, and they still have a good team. They've got 50 wins. It would seem odd to me if they end up giving up on this season.
Well, he, to me, doesn't fit the conversation that you would normally have for a club that's close and they're in it. Why would you trade one of your pillars of your rotation? The reason I say he doesn't fit that normal conversation because there's always a team and a pitcher that kind of fit that mold every year. The Indians are fed up with him. They don't like him. And Trevor Bauer doesn't like the Indians.
He's a weird dude.
This kid has come in, and he was a guest analyst on our network. I had a chance to meet him, know him, love him. I think he's an interesting guy. He's a walking movie. There's no one like him. But baseball is kind of an old boy sport, and everyone kind of falls in line. You got it, Skip. You want me to do that? You got it. Trevor Bauer thinks everyone is insanely uninformed, and he is well-read on everything he needs to do, and he doesn't want advice from anyone because give me your credentials. Why do you think you know more about my right arm than me? So it's hard to manage a guy like that if you don't have an open mind. The Indians have tried to have an open mind. That's why they acquired him from the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were fed up with him in short order. So they're fed up now. And he's been pitching rather well, and they're still fed up. So I think they look at this as addition by subtraction. I don't think they're going to wave the white flag by trading Trevor Bauer. I think they look at it as an opportunity to trade while the stock is high and replenish a farm system, add to it while we're still being competitive, and that's where they're going to try to sell their fan base. I think Corey Kluber's health is going to impact a decision that they could make in the next couple of weeks. Corey, how are you feeling? Is there any opportunity that you could come back? If there is, you can see Bauer get dealt. If there's not, they might hold on to him because this could be one of their final season's opportunities in the Francisco Lindor window before he hits free agency.
Hey, Greg, I've got a note for you before we let you go for MLB tonight, this evening. I know Max Scherzer is going to miss his start on Sunday with back tightness. It'll probably ruin his National Different Colored Eyes Day, which is today.
It is so freaky to stand next to him, man. Could you imagine when he broke his nose? Not only had two different colored eyes, but he had a black eye.
Three different colored eyes.
He bases his mechanics and the fact that he grunts and screams at you while he's pitching. But those two different colored eyes, man, just adds to the – I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say something because I'm a fan. I'm just going to say it as a fan. I hope it's not going to happen because the Washington Nationals want him to be their first Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But I really would have loved to see Max Scherzer pitch in his hometown of St. Louis. You have a Hall of Fame player from St. Louis who never played for the Cardinals. And he told me that he wanted to come to St. Louis as a free agent, but there was no interest on the other end.
Yeah. That's one 2020 hindsight. The Cardinals missed out big time on that one.
They did. They did. And it would have been great to see him wear the birds and the bat because it would have meant a lot to him. And to see how he's performed for the Washington Nationals, the grunting would have been to Monica Seles levels in St. Louis. It would have been incredible.
Hey, we'll be watching tonight. Always good to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, buddy. That is the great Greg Amsinger from MLB Network on 101 ESPN. It is flashback week, and a guy who has been a big part of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s in St. Louis. Dan Dierdorf joins us next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. It's flashback week on 101 ESPN. Brad Thompson is out today. Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you. And I always like to flash back to 1984 when I got my first full-time job in radio. And my first job as a full-time employee at KMOX was producing Sports Open Line for Dan Dierdorf, who's with us now on 101 ESPN via the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. You taught me so much, and I'm thrilled that you're with us today. How you doing?
Hello, Randy. How you doing? And, wow, it doesn't seem like as long ago as it really was.
No, time flies, doesn't it? And you have kids, and I know that your daughters have gotten married. It's amazing how time flies, and it doesn't seem long ago because I remember it so well.
Maybe the best analogy I ever heard about getting older, life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes.
Exactly. That is the first time I've heard that. I have never heard that ever, and I love it.
Yeah, well, it's, I'm telling you, it does. It just it doesn't seem possible. 1984, you say that to somebody now who's under 30, and they wasn't that a novel? Was that wasn't that a movie? it just seems like that. Well, I'm sorry,
George Orwell,
I'm old, Randy, and you're creeping up on it.
I know I am. I feel it every day.
Tell me about it.
Oh, I think you guys are doing great, both of you.
Well, you know, I just turned 70, and I can't hardly. That actually is the first time I've ever made that come out of my mouth. So I'm making progress, but yeah, it just doesn't seem like it was that long ago when I was running out of the tunnel onto the floor at Busch Stadium, and you know, maybe I should realize how old I am, considering. Neither the stadium nor the team is here anymore.
Dan, I was telling these guys the other day, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it's my thought that if the football Cardinals had drafted Robin Cole rather than Steve Pizarkowitz, nothing against Steve Pizarkowitz, but if the Cardinals had added that, the football Cardinals had added that impact defensive player in the 70s, that might have been the difference between going to a Super Bowl and not.
Well, and you know, what was really incredible about that is that the offensive coach of all offensive coaches, Don Coryell, wanted to draft Robin Cole, a linebacker. And he knew what this team needed. He knew what it needed to get over the hump, and that was to get an impact defensive player to go along with Roger Worley and some of the other core guys that we had. And he was completely excluded from the process. Things were so backwards with the Cardinals back then that the head coach wasn't even allowed in the draft room while the draft was taking place. When you look at today's draft, you'd think, well, it was being run by cavemen back then.
It was unbelievable. And your team, and this is another thing, and I know that you'll agree with me on this, what we see today in the NFL with the passing games is a direct result of what Don Coryell brought here in 1973.
Well, sure, I think so. I think Don, the NFL was, and all of football, it was the same. It was really the same in the vast majority of major college teams, it was a run league. You ran the ball three quarters of the time, and you threw it 25% of the time. And you know, to a lot of coaches, passing the ball was kind of like a necessary evil. You knew you had to do it, but you grimaced every time you had to do it. And Don changed all that. Don was good. Let's throw it on first down. Dallas wants to play this flex defense with two of their defensive linemen off the ball. Well, great. We'll throw it every time they get in that because two of them can't get to the quarterback. And so you're right. To the players, Don Coryell gets the credit he deserves. It's with some of the voters at the Hall of Fame who don't realize they're just not in tune with the impact he had in building the modern-day NFL.
And now you've got situations like what's happening with Melvin Gordon, and you've got running backs who are just not getting paid like they used to. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, he ended up getting his money, but they don't have as much leverage as they used to because teams are finding ways to have a run game without a superstar running back. How are teams able to do that without, I mean, obviously if you can have a special player at the position you would like to, but teams are not overextending themselves to get them or keep them.
Well, I think part of it is that the running back position has been devalued because it's become such a passing league. And, you know, that you don't have to run the football anymore against an eight-man front because you don't see eight-man fronts anymore because of the fact that you've got to have people back in coverage. And now the running game in the NFL for most teams is set up by having success passing the football. And so, I will never, ever be in the camp of not realizing that you can't win consistently without a good running game and a good running back unless you're one of the few teams in the NFL that has a Tom Brady-type quarterback who can carry an entire football team on his shoulders. I'm sorry, but I think that the Ezekiel Elliotts and the Le'Veon Bells of the world still have great value to their football teams.
Dan Dierdorf, the Hall of Famer, is with us on 101 ESPN, Hall of Fame player and a pre-Rosell Award winner for a Hall of Fame broadcaster in the NFL, too. Dan, I remember a story, and you can tell me if I completely missed this one or not. I heard a story one time that at one point the football Cardinal offensive line got back from a Monday night game and went to the Denny's near the airport and ordered everything on the menu.
Well, yeah, I know. That's a great story, isn't it? We did not order everything on the menu. Last time I looked, and I haven't been in a Denny's in a while, but they have rather an extensive menu. That would have been, and there would have been, let's be realistic, there would have been a few things on there that just wouldn't have gone down very well. Well, we ordered a lot of what we ordered, and I think the staff at Denny's was suitably impressed, and I think it got reported that we ordered the whole menu, but, you know, I had a couple guys, Bob Young in particular, who, poor Bob, if he was still with us, I'd send him to Nathan's for that hot dog. Bob Young could eat more than anybody I've ever known and do it in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, so why is it that these skinny dudes are able to win these eating competitions? You should have NFL linemen in there.
Well, at least we look the part. Frankly, I got to tell you something. I can't watch those hot dog eating.
Me neither. They make me sick.
I think they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
In this day and age, I think gluttony like that is lunacy. But I am pretty amazed by the size of some of the people who win those things. Where do it go?
And 71 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Joey Chestnut.
I only have one question, and it's a one-word question. Why?
Yeah. I'm with you, man. It's disgusting. It grosses me out watching it.
Yeah.
Well, really. I mean, I really couldn't watch one from start to end. A 15-second snippet is enough to completely repulsed me to the point where I changed channels.
It is amazing how we have changed as a society because I think, and I will admit it, I do watch the hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July. But if you go back 30 years, I probably would have been repulsed by it now. But I'm going with the flow with society now.
Well, you know, there are county fairs where, you know, they have pie eating contests, and you got to eat a pie without using your hands. And you'll see everybody putting their face down in a cherry pie. I'm okay with that. That's a once a day thing. But there's just something about choking down those hot dogs the way they do it. You either love it or you hate it, and I'm in the hate it category. But obviously a lot of people love it. I just to me, it just, I'd like to talk to a physics professor about where, how that happens, how it works.
Was there something, Dan, when you tipped the scales at 300 that you could just eat and eat and eat?
Oh, it was a vast array of things.
You were probably thinking of a steak.
The worst displays would be when it's a lot of times we'd be at training camp, and we would, especially when I first came in the league and we had training camp up at Lake Forest, Illinois, and Stormy Bidwell only lived about he only lived 10 minutes away, and he'd always bring his friends over for to eat training table with the team. Well, what that meant was, I mean, we just had steaks every night and you know, 50 pounds of shrimp and pigs with apples in their mouths and out there for and we would come off the practice field and we would immediately go. We had about an hour or more where we could go rehydrate, and so we would go rehydrate, and then we'd show up at training table. And oh boy, that, the all the lights were green, and away we go.
See, now that's an NFL diet. I'm wondering what you did at Michigan then.
I didn't eat like that. I can tell you, it was. I will say this: that Bo Schembechler gave me an unrealistic reporting weight when I was a senior, and I met it. And he asked me if I would I lose like 3 more pounds so we wouldn't have a guy on the team that weighed over like 245. It was the most depressing thing that ever happened to me that he asked me that. I immediately got in my car. I drove to Burger King and I ate 6 Whoppers. I sat there and I ate 6 Whoppers. The next day, I weighed in 16 pounds heavier than I weighed the day before.
What?
And Bo was furious with me, and I didn't care. He broke me.
Hall of Famer Dan Dierdorf with us on 101 ESPN. Hey, I wanted to touch on Michigan because of the departure of Urban Meyer from Ohio State. To me, that opens the door a little bit for Michigan. I think Urban Meyer was so good and had that thing going so well at Ohio State. I don't know who you were going to bring in there to beat Urban Meyer on a regular basis. Do you think this changes things for Harbaugh and Michigan dramatically?
Well, and more importantly, I think Jim Harbaugh has made some major changes. Michigan was one of the very few teams in college football that ran an NFL offense. We were one of the very few teams, a handful, that huddled. And if you heard a play called in the Michigan huddle, it sounds the same as if they were calling a play in the San Francisco 49ers huddle. Well, you know, nobody in college football does that anymore. Everybody now looks to the sidelines. The play comes in, the formation comes in, the snap count comes in. It's so simplified, and Jim Harbaugh has made that adjustment. Michigan is going to enter the new era. He's turned the offense over to a fellow named Josh Gattis that he hired from the University of Alabama. And I think even more importantly than Urban Meyer leaving Columbus, and I'm not sorry he's gone, he was what Urban really was an unbelievable recruiter, a phenomenal recruiter. But I'm really pleased with the changes that we've made in Ann Arbor. I think it's more important now what we do than what anybody else does.
And that's hard for coaches to do. I remember how hard it was for Gary Pinkel to, and for a guy like Harbaugh who grew up with Bo and with Ditka, it's got to be really tough to make that switch as a head coach.
Well, it always worked for him, Randy. He had a system. Yeah, the Harbaugh might have been a quarterback, but he coached like a linebacker, still does. But he'd like to have 3 tight ends and a fullback, and run a slow play clock. and just hammer away at you. And it just it's not an offense that you can count on every day in college football. And I got to give him a lot of credit. It's at his age, with his pedigree, to do what Jim Harbaugh has done this year in turning it over to a younger guy and saying, okay, I'm willing to completely reinvent myself offensively. I'm very proud of him, and I'm it's going to be a big success.
How does Jim Harbaugh relate to the college player?
They love him. He's quirky. He's but he's you know, a lot of people think that, you know, he's a little odd. Let me tell you something. Behind closed doors, those players, they love Jim. He never throws a player under the bus. He never criticizes a player publicly. He's demanding, but he also realizes that they're kids. And that's why they take these trips where, you know, they've gone to South Africa, they've gone to Rome, they've gone to Normandy, France. And he goes, you know, I've called me old-fashioned, but I still think the phrase student-athlete has some meaning. And more people at the collegiate level should feel that way.
Hey, Dan, before we let you go, I mentioned you won the Pete Rozelle Award. You're in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You are a decorated broadcaster, broadcasting now at your alma mater, where you're also a Hall of Famer. I would think, though, all of that athletic stuff, as great as it is, that kind of goes out the window when you drive by Cardinal Glenn and Children's Hospital and you see the Dan Dierdorf Emergency and Trauma Center. That's something that's really special that you've done in a community for thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
It's probably the most gratifying thing that I've done in my life is my affiliation with Cardinal Glennon. It's been like 33 years now, and you know, I as an athlete, I think more than anybody else, we realize how fortunate we are as athletes to get to do what we do. But what we have to have is good health, and we have to be physically gifted, and all the things that a lot of the kids at a children's hospital are not. And if you don't realize how fortunate you are and have some itch to try to make other people's lives better, well, then shame on you. And I've been very fortunate. My affiliation with Cardinal Glennon is something that's very, very dear to me.
And I need to make this point because people might not be aware that Dan Dierdorf once was an analyst for Blues hockey, too. So what was it like in the Dierdorf residence when the Blues won Game 7?
I'll tell you, like everybody else, I'm just so proud of them. But I have to tell you, when they're counting down and it's the final 10 or 15 seconds and I'm watching it on television, for the entire 10 or 15 seconds as it's counting down, the only person I was thinking of was Dan Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And how extraordinary that would have been for Dan to have seen that, because Dan Kelly was everything. If you were a Blues hockey fan back in the day, and I thought of him more than anything else.
Yeah, it was great, and he was the best ever. Dan, we appreciate your time. Please tell Debbie I said hi, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys. Nice catching up with you. And by the way, it was sunny and 75 degrees up here in Michigan today. I'm assuming it's a little warmer down there.
It's 112.
It's in the 90s. Yeah, 112 is the heat index. So yeah.
I'm like the jerk in January. It tells you how nice it is in Florida. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's.
Thanks,
I'll
Dan.
Hang up now.
We'll talk to you later. See ya. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
That's our friend Dan Dierdorf on 101 ESPN. He is the best, and I was always amazed when ABC hired John Madden and Dan Dierdorf walked out the door, because I think Dan Dierdorf was every bit the analyst and the personality that John Madden. Dan, you can hear it right there that John Madden is. Dan's as good a football analyst as there ever was.
He is. He's excellent. He's also wrong about the pie eating contest. That's disgusting too. I've seen Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Are you buying that they didn't order everything on the menu? Think about this. Yeah, because when you get
it's
in...
It's a big menu.
You get on an NFL plane, a charter, after a Monday night game, and what happens is the players that don't drink always give their beers to the offensive linemen. So that group gets off. They get to Denny's. I have to believe that they probably couldn't even read the menu at that time and just said, give us one of everything.
Oh, it's such a big menu. Maybe it was smaller back then.
This is how much society has changed, and I'll be very quick here. The Post-Dispatch got the guys together and wrote about how they had had a little bit to drink and went to Denny's. So they got them and brought them back to Denny's sober, and they couldn't even touch what they had done when they were a little bit in the bottle.
It's amazing what you're capable of then.
It really is. Coming up, some bad news for the Cardinals today and a different looking lineup. We'll talk about it next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's the Cardinals skipper Mike Schilt talking about Adam Wainwright. The Cardinals had an optional workout yesterday. Waino had the back spasms and is not obviously going to pitch for them tonight. So Daniel Ponce de Leon will get the start. And ordinarily, when a player has back spasms, you don't worry about it too much. But when it's a 36, 37-year-old guy who's had injury issues, you worry about it a little bit more.
And because it can pop up at any time. And we know that he's had, he's been dealing with some back issues. I can't remember how long it's been.
About a week back.
Yeah, okay, it's been about a week back. And that's a problem, man. Once you have a back problem, it doesn't matter if you're 25 or 35, that's going to stick around with you, and it's very difficult to get past. So if I'm the Cardinals, I'm taking it easy with him. I'm not going to push him, because if you do and you desperately want to get him back out there for whatever reason, he's probably not going to be as effective. I mean, he needs to be as close to 100% as possible.
It is nice to have a guy like Daniel Ponce de Leon just sitting there waiting to take a start like this tonight.
Yeah. I think he'll...
five strong?
Yeah, but how's he going to find his way out there to the mound?
Oh, he'll navigate his way. Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll just do a little bit of exploring, I'm sure, on his way. And
yeah.
He'll get there.
And I'm sure, Randy, this is also an opportunity for the Cardinals to be able to see more from him. If this becomes an extended thing where Wainwright is not able to come back in a couple of days, and maybe it is another missed start that happens, and who knows? He could re-aggravate it, and it could become a thing that it's just sticking around with him for the next several weeks. These are all possibilities, but at least if that happens, you can get a better look at Ponce de Leon, which is a good thing for the Cardinals moving forward, because while they are trying to do something this season, get to the playoffs, they also need to evaluate some of their talent.
Right.
And this is an opportunity for it.
Colton Wong sits against the left-hander Robbie Ray tonight. The Cardinal lineup has Tommy Edman leading off at second base. Jose Martinez is in left. Obviously, Marcelo Ozuna is still injured. Paul DeJong at short. Goldschmidt is your cleanup hitter tonight. Then Matt Carpenter back in there hitting fifth and playing third base. Fowler hitting sixth. Wieters hitting seventh. Bader hitting eighth. So a different-looking lineup, obviously, with Wong or not in there and Edmund in there and no Ozuna. So you have Martinez and Matt Carpenter returning. You're going to have a different-looking lineup. And not having huge expectations of them. I'm just intrigued to see what they can do. I don't know how good this lineup can be. I don't see this as a lineup that is the one that goes on a run for you.
Well, it's not going anywhere without Goldschmidt and Carpenter playing back to their typicals. You know, if they don't perform like they normally do, this team cannot win. Look, I know that they're close. I know that they are still within shouting distance of the top of the Central Division. I know it's the same thing in the wild card, but you have to look at what they are compared to all the other teams in the National League. And while the Cardinals, you can argue, have a lot of potential to be good, to be really, really good for the rest of the year, and I think that's true, so does everybody else. So do the Cubs.
Yep.
So do the Brewers. The Cubs won again today. They beat Pittsburgh. So that team, and you've brought up the record of Joe Maddon and the Cubs in the second half since he has been a part of that organization, and they usually take off in the second half. It doesn't guarantee it's going to happen, but the trend is that they do. The Dodgers are an excellent team, probably the best in the National League. Well, certainly the best in the National League. The Braves are a good team. Even the Nationals and the Phillies are good teams here. I think the Cardinals have to look at what they are compared to everybody else in the league and realize this is going to be tough, and it will be impossible without Carpenter and Goldschmidt playing like they usually do.
Marp has hit in every single position in the order in his career. His lowest OPS in a spot in the lineup is eighth. His second lowest OPS in a spot in the lineup is where he's hitting tonight, fifth. A 670 OPS, only 303 on base, only a 367 slug. Granted, in an extremely small sample size, he's only had 33 plate appearances in that spot. But the fact of the matter is, he hasn't been nearly as good anywhere else for his career as he has been in the leadoff spot.
Well, and who knows if that's a chicken or egg thing, right? Maybe he gets the bat leadoff because he has been that productive there, so they just leave him. Or maybe it's a function of him getting to be in that position and it makes him more comfortable. Therefore, he produces more. I don't know what it is, but I do know this year it hasn't been working for him no matter what. So I don't think you can keep running him out there as the leadoff hitter, starting off the game that way with, not that he's an automatic out, but he's just, he's not doing what he typically does. You can't live like that.
I hope that there was a legitimate issue with his back that caused issues with the torque and resulted in the lower exit velocity, the lower average exit velocity. And I hope the time on the DL has solved that problem, whatever it might have been. That's what I'm hoping.
That's the thing. This is all about hope.
Being a homer. H-O-M-E-R.
Well, no. See, you're not, Randy, because that's what everybody's thinking. Hope is what we all have. But you can be hopeful, but also look at it realistically and understand this isn't a great situation. I know they're close, but if we're projecting, you got to look at everybody else in the league. Look at where they are. Look at what they've got. Look at what they're deficient in. It's not a great spot.
Always.
But we're still hoping anything can happen.
Hey, everyone always wants to choose the cake they want on their birthday, right? Well, one girl decided to leave it in the hands of her mom, and that did not work out. That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.